Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion. This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G.
Thank you. Okay. Here we have our peak oil forecast. Walter Youngquist and I did this in 1999. We actually did it in 1998. I want you to note only the red curve here. This is world oil production. It's data from 1960 to 1996, and then the forecast is down here. Okay. First of all, I want you to be amazed that back then, world oil forecasts in 1960 was only about 8 billion barrels, and by 1970, it has grown to 18 billion barrels, over 100% increase in 10 years. That's what we've been used to, that's what we want, and that's what we'll never get. There are two sharp peaks here, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But I want to focus on this peak from here to here. This is exactly what Walter Youngquist and I forecast nearly 10 years ago. These peaks, you have a positive first derivative and a negative first derivative. Here you have very smooth changes. Walter Youngquist does all of the petroleum geology, and I do all the math and modeling. We work together very well. And I'm so proud to have him as a colleague now for more than 11 years. Transparency number two, we have peak oil in 2006. This is the data. This is all data. There is no forecasting here whatsoever. Correlation is not causality, but without correlation, there is no causality. So I'll just mention a correlation here. You have here the Yom Kippur War. You have here the Arab oil embargo. Here you have the disposition of the Shah of Iran. And then you have the Iraq-Iran War for 8 years. Here you have the Asian economic meltdown. And here you have the dot-com bubble burst in the United States. And note how different this peak is. Now we're going up like this. And I have some numbers here. We have growth in 2004, we're both about 4% per year, and then the growth dropped down to 1.1% per year in 2005, and down to 0.2% in 2006. And now the first 6 months of 2007, it's gone down at 0.4%. And Walter Youngquist says we're now in depletion dominate. It dominates everything. Technological change, it dominates investment, capital, it dominates everything. Okay, now, from a mathematical standpoint, I hope I've explained that mathematically it's also quite different from the previous temporary maximum. Next, Next slide, please. Here we have the Olduvai theory. This indicator is world total oil production over world total population. Population is half of the, what we call the Ackerman indicator. Ackerman was a very close friend, colleague of M. King Hubbard. You see that this indicator is very accurate for the Great Depression, the end of World War II, and the growth up here. Now, it hit a peak in 1979, and it's been going like this. Well, you can't test your own theory against your old data. You need a separate set of data to test your theory. And you see, now the EIA is documenting Ackerman's law, and it agrees exactly with my data. Think of the Olduvai theory this way. You have a video of world history from prehistory until 2010. And then you stop the camera. And then you play the reel backwards. Hard to believe. But the Olduvai theory, as awful as it is, remember that the Copernican theory was rejected for over 200 years before the world could accept it. And the Olduvai theory does explain the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox said that, okay, if they're out there, why haven't we detected them yet? The Olduvai theory explains how immigration, illegal immigration, population, etc., will adjust to the local footprint worldwide. It will be 100% dependent upon solar energy. Electric power, most people don't know that there's a tremendous amount of energy theft, electricity theft in the United States, billions and billions of dollars a year. You don't hear that. I can explain that to you later, perhaps. But I couldn't find anything for Mexico, but for Jamaica, here are the power lines above, and here are all the illegal connections. In Mexico, about 40% of the power is not paid for. These are connections for the power line. You see these connections coming down like this? None of this electricity is paid for in Mexico. Mexico is, I claim as an engineer, and measured by engineering factors, it's a failed country. The main, the mother of all grids in this world is electric power, not oil, not natural gas. As I said, I don't want to go into that. But without electric power, there would be no oil, no natural gas. Here is the New York blackout of 2003. It actually extended from Canada all the way down to Philadelphia. And Hans Thuring said this about electric power. If in any developed country, electric power is lost, 3/4 of the population will die within a few days. Think about it. And he said that, Hans Thuring, colleague of Erich Schrödinger, and he said that, wrote that in 1956. It's true today as ever. And people think, oh, we've got to improve the grid in America, these New York blackouts and the greater blackouts, and occasionally in Los Angeles down here. The greatest threat to America is not a blackout in America, it's a blackout in Mexico City and the environs. There's 30 million people living right here. If that area would black out from electricity, we would have tsunamis of 10s, 20s, 100,000 people a day coming north across the border.
Do your work, do you do? Yaga, 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 who want the dance and to stop? Police, who now want to see Earth a shop? Police, who kill the youth from the block? Police, them now want to hear truth, mother's pop, who want to see Earth a drive? Get to survive. Police, as we see them, get a youth have to die. Hey yo, who has the legal long gun? Who have murdered the youth, them are damn dumb. Who have innocent youth locked down? A steel farmer who burned the earth down. Family a little youth in law. Every man a bigger reap by them saw. Only for innocent brains them blow. Police a blood them claw.
dance hall to stop. Police, who now have to see herbs a shop? Police, who kill the youth from the block? Police, them now have to hear youth, them now right pop. Who have to see herbs a drive? Police, are the easiest man to drive. Police, them now have to see youth survive. Police, as we see them, get the youth have to die. Hey yo, see them every day, on the highway. Man for bribe. Police, them no have to see get to survive. Police, as me see them, look me have to make a dive. Me look and see laws and orders collapse. So you have to careful how them pass you in a the trap. Then I lock you up, them and lick out your head back. See, in a the city, brother, the armpits, looting and the shooting must stop. And that's why Anthony be a bustle fire. Me call you them from jungle and river back.
There's a whole other part of this where Silicon Valley Bank actually had the cash sweep ability. It's on their website. It's advertised like you can do this to minimize your risk. And only a very small portion of their deposits actually took advantage of the opportunity. And I've been told a couple things by a couple different people. One is that the bank said that, only some people can access this, and we're getting around to making a change so everybody can access it, and then they never did. I've been told that VCs essentially told the companies, you have to bank and put all your money in this bank, and you can't move it around or do anything else. And in exchange, founders and VCs would get sweetheart deals. There's corruption in here, too, and I hope that does come out even further. But, I mean, we already know about some of that stuff. First Republic, which is this other bank that's in trouble, they got a big cash infusion from the big banks of $30 billion, kind of a private rescue. They gave a below rate interest mortgage to Mark Zuckerberg as if he needed it, right? This is apparently in the tech world. This was like a quid pro quo thing with Countrywide way back in the day. They would have, Chris Dodd got a cheap mortgage with Countrywide. I mean, yes, this stuff goes on. And then the other thing is that Silicon Valley Bank was essentially investing in a lot of these companies on the side. So they were taking these deposits and then investing back into these companies in a way that was supposed to be prohibited by the Volcker Rule, which was this thing about using depositor money to make risky trades. Investing in high-risk startups, it certainly would have been covered by the Volcker Rule, but they got an exemption to that that they also lobbied for. So there was a lot going on here with respect to the bank, but I don't think these depositors, these whiny VC idiots that think that they now have to reinvent insured cash sweeps or these kinds of things that get around the FDIC limits, when they've already existed, much like when Uber and Lyft reinvented the bus, is just absolutely absurd. Yeah. I mean, the goal of all this from the perspective of the people who got the billions of dollars in government largesse, And by the way, not just at Silicon Valley Bank, but it's really much more important for the banks that didn't fail, that were on the precipice, because now they have access to a loan facility where they can put in all that stuff that they had losses on, all those long-dated securities. They can get for a year, get a loan from the Federal Reserve at par. In other words, this is worth X amount of dollars now, but we'll give you the face value, which was much higher, and we'll give it to you as a loan. That's your collateral. Those are the people who got the real bailout. I mean, that's the one that nobody wants to talk about. But anyway, right, that's right. And so it's a massive backdoor bailout, and it's mostly to the banks that were going to fail in the future and now will not, because they now have a rescue program in place. And that's a bailout to their shareholders, that's a bailout to their executives, and that's a bailout to their bondholders, which is exactly what was said was we're not going to ever do again. This is supposed to be done through bank assessments. Well, what does the bank do when they get a big assessment? They try to figure out a way to make up the money on the back end, and ultimately that rolls down to their customers. Maybe they increase their overdraft fees by a little bit. It's a ridiculous argument. This was obviously a bailout. This was a bigger bailout than you even think about, because when people are arguing about this, they're really arguing only about the protection of depositors through the insurance that are uninsured. But it's that term facilities that we were just talking about that's the real.
Bad boys and police, sing that name. Police and thief in a shootout. Now I did the other them now cool out. In the community, the innocent are move out. The gangster, them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be friends. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money on them head and them theater. Them boy, we not real them. Police and bus. Bad boys return shot. The whole of them strap. Everybody blood out. Them not take no chat. So when the violence on us stop. Police and thief in a shootout. Now I did the others. Them not cool out. In the community the innocent to move out. The gangster them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money on them head and them theater. Them boy, we not real them. Them born and shape out in a badness. Them treat life like a sadness. If them no go and tell them got a casket. Them show no love at all. Who is to blame? Better blame yourself. Them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be friends. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money on them head and them theater. Them boy, we not real them. Police and bus shot. People get flat. Bad boys return shot. The whole of them strap. Everybody blood out. Them not take no chance. So when the violence on us stop, police and thief in a shootout. Now I did the actors, them now cool out. In the community, the innocent are move out. The gangster, them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be friends. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money on them head and them theater. Them boy, we not real them. Them born and shit for.
location of the bailout. Let me just make one last point, is that the entire modus operandi for those who orchestrated this is to get out of being blamed for it. So everything that you see a David Sachs say, everything that you see a Janet Yellen say, everything that you see a Jerome Powell say is designed to remove themselves from blame. And I will just briefly plug the story that we ran. I guess I actually ran it last night because the New York Times kind of scooped me a little bit, so I ran it like 2 minutes later, which is that in the moments when the federal regulators were figuring out what to do last week, they had come up with the plan, and they were just writing the statement out, and Treasury and the FDIC and the administration wanted to include the fact that there was a regulatory failure, and Jerome Powell blocked that language. He did not want any mention of regulation, supervision, or accountability because that would all point back at him. And so he forced that out of the joint statement, and he even tried to influence the president's statement. Think about how extraordinary this is. The Federal Reserve chairman saying, don't put regulation in your statement, Mr. President, the statement coming out of your mouth. And he got him to soften that a little bit, although the next day Biden came out and said there was a regulatory failure and we got to look. So it's a little more inside baseball than Biden walking up and saying you're fired. But I do think there is a possibility of that. And the hilarious thing about this, of course, is that in that 2021 conversation around should we renominate Powell or not, the people on the renominate Powell side, the Josh Barrows, the Matt Iglesiases, Dean Baker, I agree with him on a lot of things, but that's where he was on this, and several others, their entire argument was, yes, he hasn't been great on financial regulation, but the macro stuff and the interest rate stuff is more important, and he's been great on that. And since that time, we've gotten two bits of information. Number one, he turned his interest rate policy on a dime when inflation went up because they were all excited because he was promoting full employment. Well, he's abandoned full employment in favor of price stability. So that's number one. Number two, turns out financial regulation is pretty goddamn important. And it affects the inflation environment, too. It affects the macro economy. And all of these people who said, oh, you can subordinate that, financial regulation isn't a factor, the real work, you Philistine, the real work of the Federal Reserve is to promote employment and the economy. Well, you were wrong. You were all wrong. You were all 100% wrong. Financial stability is a key organ of the Federal Reserve's mission, and I'd be happy to strip it all from them because they're incompetent and they don't view it as part of their job either, which is why they failed. But it is right now, and you need someone in that office who actually knows how to do the damn job, because here's the thing they're not thinking about and that nobody is thinking about. When you engage in this big a rescue of the economy and you say that all insured deposits are going to be covered, we're not going to let any important bank fail, what do? You're inviting those institutions to take risks, and you're telling the market, we're not going to have a problem because we're going to take care of it. And what has that created in the last week? Asset price inflation. We've seen crypto go crazy. We've seen the stock market go way up. And asset price inflation is also inflation. People think they have more money because they have more money in their portfolios and they're going to go out and spend again. So the inflation is now going to come through a different channel. And because the Fed is so blinkered that they think the only way to deal with this is through throwing a bunch of people out of work, it's just going to lead to throwing a bunch more people out of work in the aftermath. And they're having to clean up for their own mistake of weak regulation, And they're going to do it by pushing the economy into recession. That's what I see.
Tonight on PBS News Weekend, a massive deadly tornado overnight leaves devastation in its wake in rural Mississippi. Then a new Pentagon study reveals U.S. military airmen and ground crews have a higher risk of cancer.
For these military families, they're running out of time. Finding out the why will be important to protect the next generation of pilots, but what they need right now is help for the current generation.
And the barriers stopping people from going to the doctor for basic care and screenings.
You and I talked about this in my program. When you see something happening like what is happening now, in other words, you firmly believe, and I believe, that Trump actually won and that there's been massive fraud. Like, you believe that, right? Okay.
100%.
So, but that's the, but okay. So let's just stop. But I'm saying, but let's just stop. So my attitude is like, so who cares what I can prove in the courts? This is right. This happened. And I'm just going to do anything I can to uncover this horror, this evil. The idea that somebody would, I mean, let's think, what could be the level of arrogance, brazenness, evil to steal? It's not stealing an election. It's like stealing the heart and soul of America.
I saw this interesting post the other day on the r/science subreddit. In 2020, Nature endorsed Joe Biden in the U.S. presidential election. A survey finds that viewing the endorsement did not change people's views of the candidates, but caused some to lose confidence in Nature and in U.S. scientists generally. Wow, that seems really bad. I guess Nature never should have made that endorsement, huh? As many people pointed out in the comments, you lose trust trying to step outside of what you're designed to do. Nature is a scientific publication. We probably see political insight as confusing. And when people are reading about something completely unrelated to politics and it gets wedged in anyways, it tends to turn people's opinions worse on whatever matter is brought in. And it's a bit worrying for non-political entities making endorsements for one party leader or the other. And science needs to be as independent as possible from politics. You know, that is just so true. Science shouldn't touch anything political. That's why real scientists only study the following list of completely apolitical topics: genetics, critical medical research and vaccine development, nutrition, human reproduction, epidemiology, atmospheric science, neurology, mechanical engineering, behavioral psychology. Now, if you just listen to these videos without watching them, I should mention that each of the things I just mentioned were accompanied with evidence of Republican lawmakers attacking scientists for studying them. And as always, you can find links to all of my sources in the full transcript, which I link below over on my Patreon. In other words, Republican politicians politicize those fields of study constantly. And so according to many people, once these topics become political, they're now no longer valid topics for scientists to discuss. But that is not the way to make progress. We cannot cede ground to anti-science politicians, backed up by the gargantuan misinformation machine that is Fox News and its ilk, which has been working hard for years to convince their credulous adherents to be incurious at best and actively opposed to reality at worst. That's why I personally am glad that Nature chose to endorse a political candidate for the first time in 2020, despite what this paper found. Every example I just listed of a politician opposing research is an example of one party politicizing science. And that party is, of course, the Republican Party. Does that mean the Democrats have been great for science? No. But if the houses in your neighborhood keep catching on fire, there's a difference between the firefighters who could be working harder and the gang of arsonists roaming the streets unchecked.
couple dudes had to push them over, branding them a squatters and people from the slum. And if they protest, then the police will come, brutalizing the people with their tear gas and guns. Who will defend the poor? Who will stand up? Not one. Then the innocent blood will run.
U.S. Coast Guard and Environmental Protection Agency officials were called to Bucks County today to help clean up hazardous materials that leaked into the Delaware River. News of the leak raised concerns about the water safety. Action News reporter Sharifa Jackson spoke to those in charge of the cleanup and asked them directly if it puts people in the area at risk.
This is just some of the white fill mixing into Mill Creek in Bristol. Officials say it began Friday night when there was a pipeline rupture at the nearby chemical plant, Trinseo PLC, releasing an estimated 8,000 gallons of latex materials into the creek.
It hit the roof of a building, went down a gutter. From the gutter, it went to a storm drain. And from the storm drain, it found another outfall basin. And from there, it started to leak into the river.
And the overnight and continuous rain only complicated the issue in attempts to stop the flow as the material continued to spread into the Delaware River. Today, crews could be seen using a vacuum-like device to suck out that latex.
It took us a little while.
Environmental crews are working as hard and as fast as they can to clean this all up. I asked how long they think it will take. They say they don't have an exact estimate, but they do plan to be here through the night. Reporting from Bristol, Sharifa Jackson for Action News at 10 on PHL 17.
Thank you. accidental conjunjo. No court out falling. Me don't attend the crack of court. None of us girl. Good morning, but they're back in the police. Why, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I don't accidental conjunjo.
This is from grist.org, how the FBI used Cop City protests to snoop on activists in Chicago. Last summer, a Chicago Against Cop City Twitter account was created and began sharing information about a campaign unfolding some 700 miles away. Its first tweet posted on July 18th promoted a talk at a community bookstore on Chicago's west side, featuring activists involved in the ongoing effort to protect a public park and forest in Atlanta. The speaking event, one of several the activists conducted across the country that year, was designed to raise awareness about the planned conversion of an 85-acre urban forest into a police training center that activists have dubbed Cop City. It took less than 2 weeks for the FBI to flag the account, which was the focal point of a sprawling federal inquiry that collected information on several Chicago-based activists and community groups. Those groups appear to have done little more than promote or attend events affiliated with the Atlanta area activists. According to a 28-page FBI record obtained through the Freedom of Information Act request, the Chicago case file is part of a larger federal law enforcement assessment related to anarchist extremism and domestic terrorism. The documents describe members of the Atlanta group as anarchist violent extremists or environmental violent extremists who are opposed to removal of trees and park land. These activists traveled to Chicago, the FBI states, to meet with like-minded individuals and provided training. There is little evidence in the unredacted portion of the files or public records to support the latter claim. Promotional material for one of the events says it featured action steps to help participants find their role in the struggle. But one of the activists who traveled to Chicago and who asked that their name not be used given the possibility of an ongoing FBI investigation said that the events were informational slideshow presentations that did not involve any kind of training. At one point in the presentation, did we advocate for illegal activity, they said, and we certainly are not advocating violence. The contents of the files were first reported by Unicorn Riot, a nonprofit media organization, at unicornriot.ninja. Assessments are a relatively new category of FBI investigation, established under guidelines issued by the agency in 2008. That can be opened with little cause and allow for physical surveillance, database searches, and the use of informants to gather intelligence. Since the FBI opened its file on the Chicago Against Cop City, more than 36 activists involved in the Atlanta protests and forest defense have been arrested and charged with felonies under Georgia's 2017 domestic terrorism law. On January 18th, a law enforcement officer shot and killed 26-year-old Manuel Esteban Turan, a community medic who had been an active member of the campaign during a raid on the encampment in the forest. Autopsy results recently released by the family revealed that Tortajita was likely sitting on the ground with both arms raised when they were shot at least 13 times. In public statements, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation maintains that Turan shot a state trooper first. However, the Bureau has released only limited information citing the ongoing investigation. Another autopsy carried out at DeKalb County Medical Examiner's Office has not been made public. A Grist analysis of 20 of the earlier arrest warrants found that none of those charged with domestic terrorism was accused of seriously injuring anyone. 9 of the activists had simply been cited for misdemeanor trespassing, though the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has said the criminal inquiries are ongoing. The terrorism charges, according to the DeKalb County prosecutor, were based on a Department of Homeland Security designation of the Atlanta Forest Defenders as domestic violent extremists. Homeland Security, like the FBI, denies that it classifies specific groups in this way. Mike Gehrman, former FBI agent and a fellow with the Brennan Center for Justice and Liberty and National Security, said, while there's nothing in the newly released FBI files to indicate they've been shared with the Georgia State authorities, The labeling of an entire group of violent extremists can shape the way law enforcement approaches social movements. This exact kind of loose language may lead to the mistaken assumption that the categorization has some legal effect, Gehrman said.
Hear me when I say, cool down your temper, Mr. Cop. Cool down. Put a smile on your face while passing through. Put away all the frowning that awful screw. And having some fun, and it's better than in the streets bashing guns. Tell him, Mr. Tell him, cool down your temper, Mr. Cop. Ooh wee, cool down. We're just licking a cup and said, cool down your temper, Mr. Cop.
History of targeting environmental activists has been actively involved in the law enforcement response to the Atlanta Forest offenders. According to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation press release, the FBI has been part of a joint task force intended to eliminate the future Atlanta Public Safety Training Center of criminal activity. In April 2022, the Homeland Security Officer for the Atlanta Fire Department referred to FBI involvement as an ongoing investigation and described the activists as a group of echo terrorists. The heavily redacted records on Chicago against Cop City included social media posts by a broad range of social justice and environmental organizations. Rising Tide Chicago, a group called Save Jackson Park, the South Shore Nature Sanctuary, and Pilsen Community Books, a popular gathering place for local activists, and the host of one of the events are all named in the files. In one instance, the FBI refers to the use of a source with direct and indirect access to activists using the bookstore as a meeting place. The records also highlight opposition to the construction of the Obama Presidential Library and the proposed expansion of a nearby golf course that would potentially require the removal of more than 2,000 trees. Save Jackson Park and the South Shore Nature Sanctuary have both campaigned to block a new golf course, which they say would destroy some of the only green space left on the Chicago South Side. The FBI concluded that the development projects in Chicago, along with the building of a police training center on the West Side, were similar to the Atlanta construction projects and could lead to potential criminal activity. The FBI Chicago office declined to comment for this story. A spokesperson for Rising Tide Chicago said the bookstore event and a teach-in at Hyde Park 3 days later were intended simply to educate people about what was happening in Atlanta. It was a speaking tour, they said. It wasn't a direct action training. The focus was about their struggle with Cop City. The spokesperson said what they don't know who is behind the Chicago Against Cop City Twitter account, and it doesn't appear to be a formal group with an on-the-ground presence. It's mostly served as a platform for sharing information about how people can support the movement in Atlanta from afar, they said. Chicago Against Cop City did not respond to a direct message request. Jeanette Hoyt, a 65-year-old teacher at City Colleges of Chicago, is the founder of Save Jackson Park. She launched the group in 2020 to oppose the cutting down of nearly 400 trees at the destruction of parkland, including a beloved woman's garden, to make way for the Obama Presidential Center, which is still under construction. According to the center's website, the woman's garden will be restored, quote unquote. One of the Save Jackson Park social media posts was retweeted by Chicago Against Cop City, and that was enough to land the group on the FBI file. The only connection between the group and Cop City is them liking me on Twitter, says Jeanette Hoyt. The Rising Tide spokesperson is not surprised the FBI is keeping tabs on the group. It was formed in 2011 and has been named in other FBI investigations, but said it's troubling that the agency would put together a dossier on organizations engaging in what are clearly constitutionally protected activities, such as attending public events and campaigning to stop controversial development projects. They are building evidence, the Rising Tide spokesperson said, and complaining social media posts for a narrative that they want to attach to the movement in Atlanta and attach to people who are concerned about green spaces being taken away in Chicago, and I'm sure other cities too. Garriman, who reviewed the documents, said the agency made several misleading connections between the various activist groups without providing evidence to back up serious claims of potential criminal activity and violent extremism among the Chicago groups. While participants in some of the Atlanta area protests have thrown rocks, broken windows, and burned a police car, nobody connected with any of the Chicago groups or campaigns appears to have engaged in similar tactics. In addition, the Police Training Academy in Chicago did not require the clearing of forested land and, despite local opposition, has already opened. Making this causal reference to an unrelated group 1,000 miles away is how the FBI gets itself in trouble, says Garriman. Referring to a pattern of FBI overreach in targeting environmental groups, I think the animus against the ideology is what's most problematic. The law enforcement response to the campaign in Atlanta has at least for now galvanized interest in the protest movement. Following the shooting of Tehran, there were marches and vigils across the country and around the world. Affinity groups have sprung up in Tucson, Minneapolis, Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, a growing number of environmental and human rights organizations have called on Georgia prosecutors to drop the domestic terrorism charges. An Atlanta resident and active participant in the campaign who has been involved in the speaking tours but requested anonymity due to ongoing police activity said that the crackdown on the forest offenders has only served to broaden the movement's public appeal. Quote, the characterization of people as domestic terrorists, it's really outraged a lot of people, they said. Lots of people are scared by that, but also more and more people are moved by the struggle and called to participate in it. This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. This is from Yahoo News, March 25th, 2023, from Boston to Detroit, why Atlanta's Cop City protests are galvanizing communities around the U.S. Protests over the construction of the new 85-acre training center for police and firefighters in Atlanta have spread well beyond the city's limits and are gaining momentum across the country. For more than 2 years, the proposed training center, dubbed Cop City by its opponents, has been the subject of criticism from environmentalists and social justice advocates alike, who argue that the construction would harm the local ecosystem and accelerate the militarization of the police.
Squeeze up, cut out. This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G.
Confront the fact that they want to build this cop city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the point that I would like to make is that we need safety. We need security. But we don't need safety and security that presumed to be forged through violence mm-hmm. and repression. Mm-hmm. The police have only been trained in violence. That is at least their primary mode of training. And how can you expect to make someone safe with a gun?
This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G.
Thank you. Okay. Here we have our peak oil forecast. Walter Youngquist and I did this in 1999. We actually did it in 1998. I want you to note only the red curve here. This is world oil production. It's data from 1960 to 1996, and then the forecast is down here. Okay. First of all, I want you to be amazed that back then, world oil forecasts in 1960 was only about 8 billion barrels, and by 1970, it has grown to 18 billion barrels, over 100% increase in 10 years. That's what we've been used to, that's what we want, and that's what we'll never get. There are two sharp peaks here, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But I want to focus on this peak from here to here. This is exactly what Walter Youngquist and I forecast nearly 10 years ago. These peaks, you have positive first derivative and the negative first derivative. Here you have very smooth changes. Walter Youngquist does all of the petroleum geology, and I do all the math and modeling. We work together very well. And I'm so proud to have him as a colleague now for more than 11 years. Transparency number two, we have peak oil in 2006. This is the data. This is all data. There is no forecasting here whatsoever. Correlation is not causality. But without correlation, there is no causality. So I'll just mention a correlation here. You have here the Yom Kippur War. You have here the Arab oil embargo. Here you have the disposition of the Shah of Iran. And then you have the Iraq-Iran war for 8 years. Here you have the Asian economic meltdown. And here you have the dot-com bubble burst in the United States. And note how different this peak is. Now we're going up like this. And I have some numbers here. We have growth in 2004. We're both about 4% per year. And then the growth dropped down to 1.1% per year in 2005 and down to 0.2% in 2006. And now the first 6 months of 2007, it's gone down at 0.4%. And Walter Youngquist says we're now in depletion dominates. It dominates everything. Technological change, it dominates investment capital, it dominates everything. Okay, now, from a mathematical standpoint, I hope I've explained that mathematically it's also quite different from the previous temporary maximum. Next slide, please. Here we have the Olduvai theory. This indicator is world total oil production over world total population. Population is half of what we call the Ackerman indicator. Ackerman was a very close friend, colleague of M. King Hubbard. You see that this indicator is very accurate for the Great Depression, the end of World War II, and the growth up here. Now, it hit a peak in 1979, and it's been going like this. Well, you can't test your own theory against your old data. You need a separate set of data to test your theory. And you see, now the EIA is documenting Ackerman's law, and it agrees exactly with my data. Think of the Olduvai theory this way. You have a video of world history from prehistory until 2010. And then you stop the camera, and then you play the reel backwards. hard to believe. But the old Levi theory, as awful as it is, remember that the Copernican theory was rejected for over 200 years before the world could accept it. And the old Levi theory does explain the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox said that, okay, if they're out there, why haven't we detected them yet? The old Levi theory explains how immigration, illegal immigration, population, etc., will adjust to the local footprint worldwide. It will be 100% dependent upon solar energy. Electric power, most people don't know that there's a tremendous amount of energy theft, electricity theft in the United States, billions and billions of dollars a year. You don't hear that. I can explain that to you later perhaps, but I couldn't find anything for Mexico, but for Jamaica, here are the power lines above, and here are all the illegal connections. In Mexico, about 40% of the power is not paid for. These are connections for the power line. You see these connections coming down like this? None of this electricity is paid for in Mexico. Mexico is, I claim as an engineer, and measured by engineering factors, it's a failed country. The main, the mother of all grids in this world is electric power, not oil, not natural gas. I don't want to go into that, but without electric power, there would be no oil, no natural gas. Here is the New York blackout of 2003. It actually extended from Canada all the way down to Philadelphia. And Hans Söring said this about electric power. If in any developed country, electric power is lost, 3/4 of the population will die within a few days. Think about it. And he said that, Hans Söring, colleague of Erich Schrödinger, and he said that, wrote that in 1956. It's true today as ever. And people think, oh, we've got to improve the grid in America, these New York blackouts and the greater blackouts, and occasionally in Los Angeles down here. The greatest threat to America is not a blackout in America, it's a blackout in Mexico City and the environs. There's 30 million people living right here. If that area would black out from electricity, we would have tsunamis of 10s, 20s, 100,000 people a day coming north across the border.
Moose, one. Do your work, do your duty.
Yaga, 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 yo, yaga, 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 yaga,
Martin, me soda, me daga, who want the dance hall to stop?
Police,
who now want to see herbs a shop?
Police,
who kill the youth from the block?
Police,
them now want to hear truth, mudless pop, who want to see herbs a drive? Yes, man, for bribe.
Police,
them no happy see get to survive.
Police,
as we see them, get a youth happy guys. Hey, yo, who has the legal long gun? Who has murdered the youth, them a damn dumb? Who has been innocent, you drop down? A steel farmer who burned the earth down. Family, a little youth, me know. Every man a bigger reap with them saw.
Police,
what the easiest
man for bribe. Police, them no have to see get to survive. Police, at me see them, look me have to make a dive. Me look and see, laws and others collapse. Collapse. So you have to careful how them catch you in a trap. Then I lock you up, them and lick out your head back.
There's a whole other part of this where Silicon Valley Bank actually had the cash sweep ability. It's on their website. It's advertised like you can do this to minimize your risk. And only a very small portion of their deposits actually took advantage of the opportunity. And I've been told a couple things by a couple different people. One is that the bank said that, oh, only some people can access this, and we're getting around to making a change so everybody can access it, and then they never did. I've been told that VCs essentially told the companies, you have to bank and put all your money in this bank, and you can't move it around or do anything else. And in exchange, founders and VCs would get sweetheart deals. There's corruption in here, too, and I hope that does come out even further. But, I mean, we already know about some of that stuff. First Republic, which is this other bank that's in trouble, they got a big cash infusion from the big banks of $30 billion, kind of a private rescue. They gave a below rate interest mortgage to Mark Zuckerberg as if he needed it, right? This is apparently in the tech world. This was like a quid pro quo thing with Countrywide way back in the day. They would have, you know, Chris Dodd got a cheap mortgage with Countrywide. I mean, yes, this stuff goes on. And then the other thing is that Silicon Valley Bank was essentially investing in a lot of these companies on the side. So they were taking these deposits and then investing back into these companies in a way that was supposed to be prohibited by the Volcker Rule, which was this thing about using depositor money to make risky trades. Investing in high-risk startups, it certainly would have been covered by the Volcker Rule, but they got an exemption to that they also lobbied for. So there was a lot going on here with respect to the bank, but I don't think these depositors, these whiny VC idiots that think that they now have to reinvent insured cash sweeps or these kinds of things that get around the FDIC limits, when they've already existed, much like when Uber and Lyft reinvented the bus, is just absolutely absurd. Yeah. I mean, the goal of all this from the perspective of the people who got the billions of dollars in government largesse, and by the way, not just at Silicon Valley Bank, but it's really much more important for the banks that didn't fail, that were on the precipice, because now they have access to a loan facility where they can put in all that stuff that they had losses on, all those long-dated securities. They can get, for a year, get a loan from the Federal Reserve at par. In other words, this is worth X amount of dollars now, but we'll give you the face value, which was much higher, and we'll give it to you as a loan. That's your collateral. Those are the people who got the real bailout. I mean, that's the one that nobody wants to talk about. But anyway, right, that's right. And so it's a massive backdoor bailout, and it's mostly to the banks that were going to fail in the future and now will not, because they now have a rescue program in place. And that's a bailout to their shareholders, that's a bailout to their executives, and that's a bailout to their bondholders, which is exactly what was said we're not going to ever do again.
this is supposed to be done through bank assessments. Well, what does the bank do when they get a big assessment? They try to figure out a way to make up the money on the back end, and ultimately that rolls down to their customers. Maybe they increase their overdraft fees by a little bit. It's a ridiculous argument. This was obviously a bailout. This was a bigger bailout than you even think about, because when people are arguing about this, they're really arguing only about the protection of depositors through the insurance that are uninsured. But it's that term facilities that we were just talking about that's the real.
Bad boys and police. Shootout. Nowadays they have them now cool out. In the community the innocent to move out. The gangster them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be friends. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money from them dead and them theater. Them water we don't real them. Police and bullshit. Get black, bad boys return sharp. The whole of them strap, everybody blood. Them not take no chance. So when the violence gonna stop? Police and thief in a shootout. Nowadays they are just them not cool out. In the community the innocent to move out. The gangster them need a new route. Police and yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money from them dead and them hear them. Them water we don't read them. Them born and shape out in a badness. Them treat life like a sadness. If them not go and tell them get a casket. Them show no love at all. Who is to blame? Better blame yourself. Shootout. Nowadays they are just them now cool out. In the community the innocent to move out. The gangster them need a new route. Police and thief couldn't be friends. Yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money from them dead and them theater. Them boy we don't read them. Police are bullshit. Get black, bad boys return sharp. The whole of them strap, everybody blood. Them not take no chance. So when the violence gonna stop? Police and thief in a shootout. Nowadays they are just them now cool out. In the community the innocent to move out. The gangster them need a new route. Police and yet the two of them are road set the same trend. Put the money from them dead and them theater. Them boys we don't read them. Them born and shape out in a badness. Them treat life like a sadness.
Location of the bailout. Let me just make one last point, is that the entire modus operandi for those who orchestrated this is to get out of being blamed for it. So everything that you see a David Sachs say, everything that you see a Janet Yellen say, everything that you see a Jerome Powell say is designed to remove themselves from blame. And I will just briefly plug the story that we ran. I guess I actually ran it last night because the New York Times kind of scooped me a little bit. So I ran it like 2 minutes later, which is that in the moments when the federal regulators were figuring out what to do last week. They had come up with the plan, and they were just writing the statement out, and Treasury and the FDIC and the administration wanted to include the fact that there was a regulatory failure, And Jerome Powell blocked that language. He did not want any mention of regulation, supervision, or accountability, because that would all point back at him. And so he forced that out of the joint statement, and he even tried to influence the president's statement. Think about how extraordinary this is. The Federal Reserve chairman saying, don't put regulation in your statement, Mr. President, the statement coming out of your mouth. And he got him to soften that a little bit, although the next day Biden came out and said there was a regulatory failure and we got to look. So it's a little more inside baseball than Biden walking up and saying you're fired. But I do think there is a possibility of that. And the hilarious thing about this, of course, is that in that 2021 conversation around should we renominate Powell or not, the people on the renominate Powell side, the Josh Barrows, the Matt Iglesias, Dean Baker, I agree with him on a lot of things, but that's where he was on this, and several others, their entire argument was, yes, he hasn't been great on financial regulation, but the macro stuff and the interest rate stuff is more important, and he's been great on that. And since that time, we've gotten two bits of information. Number one, he turned his interest rate policy on a dime when inflation went up, because they were all excited because he was promoting full employment. Well, he's abandoned full employment in favor of price stability. So that's number one. Number two, turns out financial regulation is pretty goddamn important, and it affects the inflation environment too. It affects the macro economy, and all of these people who said, oh, you can subordinate that, financial regulation isn't a factor, the real work, you Philistine, the real work of the Federal Reserve is to promote employment in the economy. Well, you were wrong. You were all wrong. You were all 100% wrong. Financial stability is a key organ of the Federal Reserve's mission, and I'd be happy to strip it all from them because they're incompetent and they don't view it as part of their job either, which is why they failed. But it is right now, and you need someone in that office who actually knows how to do the damn job, because here's the thing they're not thinking about and that nobody is thinking about. When you engage in this big a rescue of the economy and you say that all insured deposits are going to be covered, we're not going to let any important bank fail, what do? You're inviting those institutions to take risks, and you're telling the market, we're not going to have a problem because we're going to take care of it. And what has that created in the last week? Asset price inflation. We've seen crypto go crazy. We've seen the stock market go way up. And asset price inflation is also inflation. People think they have more money because they have more money in their portfolios and they're going to go out and spend again. So the inflation is now going to come through a different channel. And because the Fed is so blinkered that they think the only way to deal with this is through throwing a bunch of people out of work, it's just going to lead to throwing a bunch more people out of work in the aftermath. And they're having to clean up for their own mistake of weak regulation, and they're going to do it by pushing the economy into recession. That's what I see. Thank you.
Tonight on PBS News Weekend, a massive deadly tornado overnight leaves devastation in its wake in rural Mississippi. Then a new Pentagon study reveals U.S. military airmen and ground crews have a higher risk of cancer.
For these military families, they're running out of time. Finding out the why will be important to protect the next generation of pilots, but what they need right now is help for the current generation.
And the barriers stopping people from going to the doctor for basic care and screenings.
You and I talked about this in my program. When you see something happening, like what is happening now, in other words, you firmly believe, and I believe, that Trump actually won and that there's been massive fraud. Like, you believe that, right? Okay.
100%.
So let's just stop. But let's just stop. So my attitude is like, so who cares what I can prove in the courts? This is right. This happened. And I'm just going to do anything I can to uncover this horror, this evil. The idea that somebody would, I mean, let's think, what could be the level of arrogance, brazenness, evil to steal? It's not stealing an election. It's like stealing the heart and soul of America.
I saw this interesting post the other day on the r/science subreddit. In 2020, Nature endorsed Joe Biden in the U.S. presidential election. A survey finds that viewing the endorsement did not change people's views of the candidates, but caused some to lose confidence in Nature and in U.S. scientists generally. Wow, that seems really bad. I guess Nature never should have made that endorsement, huh? As many people pointed out in the comments, you lose trust trying to step outside of what you're designed to do. Nature is a scientific publication. We probably see political insight as confusing. And when people are reading about something completely unrelated to politics and it gets wedged in anyways, it tends to turn people's opinions worse on whatever matter is brought in. And it's a bit worrying for non-political entities making endorsements for one party leader or the other. And science needs to be as independent as possible from politics. You know, that is just so true. Science shouldn't touch anything political. That's why real scientists only study the following list of completely apolitical topics: genetics, critical medical research and vaccine development, nutrition, human reproduction, epidemiology, atmospheric science, neurology, mechanical engineering, behavioral psychology. Now, if you just listen to these videos without watching them, I should mention that each of the things I just mentioned were accompanied with evidence of Republican lawmakers attacking scientists for studying them. And as always, you can find links to all of my sources in the full transcript, which I link below over on my Patreon. In other words, Republican politicians politicize those fields of study constantly. And so according to many people, once these topics become political, they're now no longer valid topics for scientists to discuss. But that is not the way to make progress. We cannot cede ground to anti-science politicians, backed up by the gargantuan misinformation machine that is Fox News and its ilk, which has been working hard for years to convince their credulous adherents to be incurious at best and actively opposed to reality at worst. That's why I personally am glad that Nature chose to endorse a political candidate for the first time in 2020, despite what this paper found. Every example I just listed of a politician opposing research is an example of one party politicizing science. And that party is, of course, the Republican Party. Does that mean the Democrats have been great for science? No. But if the houses in your neighborhood keep catching on fire, there's a difference between the firefighters who could be working harder and the gang of arsonists roaming the streets unchecked.
Hypocrite world.
across the border, where the living it is harder. People running away from war, famine, disease and hunger. Some sail across the ocean and couple pieces of lumber. Set a new law. Them only there for the power. Preach a man come and talk much love, yet he bless the bomb that they bring to war. Bring for his people to rise and another nation to fall. Never answer to that call. Still I know one day the big man will get small. People from the slum, and if they protest, then the police will come, brutalizing the people with their tear gas and guns. Who will defend the poor? Who will stand up? Not one. Then the innocent blood will run.
Coast Guard and Environmental Protection Agency officials were called to Bucks County today to help clean up hazardous materials that leaked into the Delaware River. News of the leak raised concerns about the water safety. Action News reporter Sharifa Jackson spoke to those in charge of the cleanup and asked them directly if it puts people in the area at risk.
This is just some of the white fill mixing into Mill Creek in Bristol. Officials say it began Friday night when there was a pipeline rupture at the nearby chemical plant, Trinseo PLC, releasing an estimated 8,000 gallons of latex materials into the creek.
It hit the roof of a building, went down a gutter. From the gutter, it went to a storm drain. And from the storm drain, it found another outfall basin. And from there, it started to leak into the river.
And the overnight and continuous rain only complicated the issue and attempts to stop the flow as the material continued to spread into the Delaware River. Today, crews could be seen using a vacuum-like device to suck out that latex.
It took us a little while.
Environmental crews are working as hard and as fast as they can to clean this all up. I asked how long they think it will take. They say they don't have an exact estimate, but they do plan to be here through the night. Reporting from Bristol, Sharifa Jackson for Action News at 10 on PHL 17.
Negative 10, nothing further. Just
what am I
looking for? What you looking at?
I'm in.
Take it live and direct from perfect.
Pulling me straight back to the police squad.
danger. Them quotes out falling. Me now no tell. I. My fire burn a dusty pastor. Down the police. Mark a disease. Mark a disease. I sell out my nephew. Brainwash me knees. Mark get locked up. Mark no release. No bigger head that she fancy. Wife and myself black youth of the West Indies. No smell a little ganja in the breeze. Why lock me up but me no baby. Jackie done tie to Junjo. Them quotes out falling. Me now go tell the clock a quote. Nine of the skeleton burning. My day back in the belly. Swagging, yang, yang, yang. Got the man Jackie done tie to Junjo. Them quotes out falling. Now go tell no clock a call. So stupid of you to think that I would run when the red and blue lights start blinking. Straight from west my eye great sink. And the constable boy knows a shrink.
This is from Grist.org, how the FBI used Cop City protests to snoop on activists in Chicago. Last summer, a Chicago Against Cop City Twitter account was created and began sharing information about a campaign unfolding some 700 miles away. Its first tweet posted on July 18th promoted a talk at a community bookstore on Chicago's west side, featuring activists involved in the ongoing effort to protect a public park and forest in Atlanta. The speaking event, one of several the activists conducted across the country that year, was designed to raise awareness about the planned conversion of an 85-acre urban forest into a police training center that activists have dubbed Cop City. It took less than 2 weeks for the FBI to flag the account, which was the focal point of a sprawling federal inquiry that collected information on several Chicago-based activists and community groups. Those groups appear to have done little more than promote or attend events affiliated with the Atlanta area activists. According to a 28-page FBI record obtained through the Freedom of Information Act request, the Chicago case file is part of a larger federal law enforcement assessment related to anarchist extremism and domestic terrorism. The documents describe members of the Atlanta group as anarchist violent extremists or environmental violent extremists who are opposed to removal of trees and park land. These activists traveled to Chicago, the FBI states, to meet with like-minded individuals and provided training. There is little evidence in the unredacted portion of the files or public records to support the latter claim. Promotional material for one of the events says it featured action steps to help participants find their role in the struggle. But one of the activists who traveled to Chicago and who asked that their name not be used given the possibility of an ongoing FBI investigation said that the events were informational slideshow presentations that did not involve any kind of training. At one point in the presentation, did we advocate for illegal activity, they said, and we certainly are not advocating violence. The contents of the files were first reported by Unicorn Riot, a nonprofit media organization, at unicornriot.ninja. Assessments are a relatively new category of FBI investigation, established under guidelines issued by the agency in 2008. That can be opened with little cause and allow for physical surveillance, database searches, and the use of informants to gather intelligence. Since the FBI opened its file on the Chicago against Cop City, more than 36 activists involved in the Atlanta protest and forest defense have been arrested and charged with felonies under Georgia's 2017 domestic terrorism law. On January 18th, a law enforcement officer shot and killed 26-year-old Manuel Esteban Turan, a community medic who had been an active member of the campaign during a raid on the encampment in the forest. Autopsy results recently released by the family revealed that Tortajita was likely sitting on the ground with both arms raised when they were shot at least 13 times. In public statements, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation maintains that Turan shot a state trooper first. However, the Bureau has released only limited information citing the ongoing investigation. Another autopsy carried out at DeKalb County Medical Examiner's Office has not been made public. A grist analysis of 20 of the earlier arrest warrants found that none of those charged with domestic terrorism was accused of seriously injuring anyone. 9 of the activists had simply been cited for misdemeanor trespassing, though the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has said criminal inquiries are ongoing. The terrorism charges, according to the DeKalb County prosecutor, were based on a Department of Homeland Security designation of the Atlanta Forest Defenders as domestic violent extremists. Homeland Security, like the FBI, denies that it classifies specific groups in this way. Mike Gehrman, former FBI agent and a fellow with the Brennan Center for Justice and Liberty and National Security, said, while there's nothing in the newly released FBI files to indicate they've been shared with the Georgia State authorities, the labeling of an entire group of violent extremists can shape the way law enforcement approaches social movements. This exact kind of loose language may lead to the mistaken assumption that the categorization has some legal effect, Gehrman said.
Cool down your
The FBI, which has a long history of targeting environmental activists, has been actively involved in the law enforcement response to the Atlanta Forest Defenders. According to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation press release, the FBI has been part of a joint task force intended to eliminate the future Atlanta Public Safety Training Center of criminal activity. In April 2022, the Homeland Security Officer for the Atlanta Fire Department referred to FBI involvement as an ongoing investigation and described the activists as a group of echo terrorists. The heavily redacted records on Chicago Against Cop City included social media posts by a broad range of social justice and environmental organizations. Rising Tide Chicago, a group called Save Jackson Park, the South Shore Nature Sanctuary, and Pilsen Community Books, a popular gathering place for local activists, and the host of one of the events are all named in the files. In one instance, the FBI refers to the use of a source with direct and indirect access to activists using the bookstore as a meeting place. The records also highlight opposition to the construction of the Obama Presidential Library and the proposed expansion of a nearby golf course that would potentially require the removal of more than 2,000 trees. Save Jackson Park and the South Shore Nature Sanctuary have both campaigned to block a new golf course, which they say would destroy some of the only green space left on the Chicago South Side. The FBI concluded that the development projects in Chicago, along with the building of a police training center on the West Side, were similar to the Atlanta construction projects and could lead to potential criminal activity. The FBI Chicago office declined to comment for this story. A spokesperson for Rising Tide Chicago said the bookstore event and a teach-in at Hyde Park 3 days later were intended simply to educate people about what was happening in Atlanta. It was a speaking tour, they said. It wasn't a direct action training. The focus was about their struggle with Cop City. The spokesperson said what they don't know who is behind the Chicago Against Cop City Twitter account, and it doesn't appear to be a formal group with an on-the-ground presence. It's mostly served as a platform for sharing information about how people can support the movement in Atlanta from afar, they said. Chicago Against Cop City did not respond to a direct message request. Jeanette Hoyt, a 65-year-old teacher at City Colleges of Chicago, is the founder of Save Jackson Park. She launched the group in 2020 to oppose the cutting down of nearly 400 trees at the destruction of parkland, including a beloved woman's garden, to make way for the Obama Presidential Center, which is still under construction. According to the center's website, the woman's garden will be restored, quote-unquote. One of the Save Jackson Park social media posts was retweeted by Chicago Against Cop City, and that was enough to land the group on the FBI file. The only connection between the group and Cop City is them liking me on Twitter, says Jeanette Hoyt. The Rising Tide spokesperson is not surprised the FBI is keeping tabs on the group. It was formed in 2011 and has been named in other FBI investigations, but said it's troubling that the agency would put together a dossier on organizations engaging in what are clearly constitutionally protected activities, such as attending public events and campaigning to stop controversial development projects. They are building evidence, the Rising Tide spokesperson said, and complaining social media posts for a narrative that they want to attach to the movement in Atlanta and attach to people who are concerned about green spaces being taken away in Chicago, and I'm sure other cities too. Garriman, who reviewed the documents, said the agency made several misleading connections between the various activist groups without providing evidence to back up serious claims of potential criminal activity and violent extremism among the Chicago groups. While participants in some of the Atlanta area protests have thrown rocks, broken windows, and burned a police car, nobody connected with any of the Chicago groups or campaigns appears to have engaged in similar tactics. In addition, the Police Training Academy in Chicago did not require the clearing of forested land and, despite local opposition, has already opened. Making this causal reference to an unrelated group 1,000 miles away is how the FBI gets itself in trouble, says Garriman. Referring to a pattern of FBI overreach in targeting environmental groups, I think the animus against the ideology is what's most problematic. The law enforcement response to the campaign in Atlanta has at least for now galvanized interest in the protest movement. Following the shooting of Tehran, there were marches and vigils across the country and around the world.
Affinity groups have sprung up in Tucson, Minneapolis, Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, a growing number of environmental and human rights organizations have called on Georgia prosecutors to drop the domestic terrorism charges. An Atlanta resident and active participant in the campaign who has been involved in the speaking tours but requested anonymity due to ongoing police activity said that the crackdown on the forest offenders has only served to broaden the movement's public appeal. Quote, the characterization of people as domestic terrorists, it's really outraged a lot of people, they said. Lots of people are scared by that, but also more and more people are moved by the struggle and called to participate in it. This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. This is from Yahoo News, March 25th, 2023, from Boston to Detroit, why Atlanta's Cop City protests are galvanizing communities around the U.S. Protests over the construction of the new 85-acre training center for police and firefighters in Atlanta have spread well beyond the city's limits and are gaining momentum across the country. For more than 2 years, the proposed training center, dubbed Cop City by its opponents, has been the subject of criticism from environmentalists and social justice advocates alike, who argue that the construction would harm the local ecosystem and accelerate the militarization of the police.
You're just a grunt and a dig like a swine. Yeah. boss up we head. We lick our children shot down and dead. Back up, pull me over and I rock up, top up. Expensive car and cool ash account. Jealousy rates stand, rip out, I run and I dig like a swine.
This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G.
I'm confront the fact that they want to build this cop city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the point that I would like to make is that we need safety. We need security. But we don't need safety and security that presumes to be forged through violence mm-hmm. and repression.
Mm-hmm.
The police have only been trained in violence. That is at least their primary mode of training. And how can you expect to make someone safe with a gun?
Mm-hmm.